Yat kripa dat hamman de shigurun dinatadinam. So this is the last session of the seminar entitled Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentary on Vedanta Sutra. And today we are going to look at the Bhagavatam description of the path of elevation and liberation, which is the Vedic path. The Vedic path is a path of elevation for all human beings, and that path is one. And it is called, as you see here, Archirati Vartmana in the Upanishads, in Vedanta Sutra, and also in Srimad Bhagavatam. The Srimad Bhagavatam verse I can refer you to for the explanation of this term, Archirata Vartmana, is from 8th Canto, Chapter 5, Text 36. So, let's just find that verse. Ah, yes. Yats chakshurasit toranir devayanam trayimayo brahmana esha dishnyam dwaram cha mukti ramritam cha mrityu prasidatam na samahavibhutihi. Which means, the sun god marks the path of liberation, which is called Archirati Vartma. He is the chief source of understanding of the Vedas. He is the abode where the absolute truth can be worshipped. He is the gateway to liberation. And he is the source of eternal life as well as the cause of death. The sun god is the eye of the Lord. May that supreme Lord, who is supremely opulent, be pleased with us. So this path of liberation, which is marked out by Archis, Archis means the rays of the sun, is referred to by Krishna in the 8th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He speaks there of actually two paths. One is called Shukla, and the other is called Krishna, or the path of light and the path of darkness. Specific now, the difference between these two is that in the Shukla Paksha, Shukla Vartma, the path of light, the sun is in the bright fortnight, what is called the bright fortnight. And in the Krishna, darkness, the sun is traveling in the dark fortnight. So now we will explain as we go on what this all means. But first of all, I want to ask from you, remembering Lord Krishna's presentation of these two paths, I think most of you can remember from the 8th chapter, the Lord speaks of two paths of elevation. So he makes a distinction between the two. He says, those who follow the path of lightness, they attain one thing, and those who follow the path of dark, something else happens to them. So can someone tell me what's the difference? Yes, one has to come back. Who? Yes, those who follow the path of dark, the Krishna path. Now, of course, this Krishna does not mean Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is another sense of the term Krishna, which means dark or black. So those who leave their body in the dark fortnight, Krishna says, they ascend to a certain level and then they return. Those who follow in the those who leave the body in the bright fortnight, they do not return to this mortal world. But both are following this path which is chalked out by the rays of the sun. So, what is being referred to is a mystic process. Now the two paths which are called in Bhagavad Gita, Shukla and Krishna, are referred to in Srimad Bhagavatam as Devayana and Pitriyana. I've put these terms on the board for you. So, the reference I can give you for Devayana and Pitriyana paths, you can look in 7th canto, 15th chapter, text 54 and 55. This will tell you about the Devayana path. 7th canto, chapter 15, text 50 and 51 will inform you of the Pitriyana path. So in short, the Devayana path is a gradual, step-by-step process which takes one up to the Brahma Loka and then finally through the layers of the universe into the spiritual realm. This is a gradual, mystical process. And this, the means of ascent of the soul is actually by way of the rays of the sun. You may remember from Nectar of Devotion, which Srila Prabhupada speaks of the Lagima Siddhi, the mystic perfection by which a yogi becomes so light that he can move on the rays of the sun. These rays become for him just like a stairway. So this is the method of elevation in Devayana as well as in Pitriyana. But the Pitriyana path does not go so far. So, now the distinction between the two paths is very important. We'll be talking about that in a moment. One thing I want to say is that there are those, you may have heard, some persons who are coming out of the so-called New Age movements, these modern spiritual groups, and they accept reincarnation of the soul. But very often their belief is that the soul is always making progress. Automatically, the soul must go up. Practically, they say, no matter what a person does, it is the arrangement of this universe that the soul will go upward into higher and higher regions. Sometimes they say the worst that might happen is that the soul will get stuck in one place for a time. But the soul will never go back. There is a group called the Theosophists, which was started by one Madame Blavatsky. So this is one of the, again using this word, archetypical New Age groups. Actually, it's not so new. It was started about 100 years ago or more. But anyway, they propagate this idea that the soul is always being promoted. And since that time, many, many other groups coming out, mystical groups and philosophical groups and so on, who dabble in the Vedas and psychic phenomena and things like that. They have this idea that the soul is always moving upwards. Now, this idea is actually very, very old, because this idea is mentioned in the Vedanta Sutra. as what is known as a Purva Paksha. Purva Paksha means a false argument. So because this false argument appears in Vedanta Sutra, we can understand that in the Vedic spiritual culture, there has always been a class who have misunderstood in this way. So the source of this misunderstanding is from the Upanishads, a wrong purport or a wrong explanation of an Upanishad called the Kaushitaki Upanishad. Verse 2 of the first chapter. Chapter 1, verse 2. This verse says that all who depart the human body go to the moon. So the moon is a heavenly planet. So from this statement has come a wrong explanation which says, yes, all souls leaving the human body will go upward on this Archiradi Vartmana. But this is wrong. What this actually means is all souls who are following the Vedic culture, they will be promoted. Either by the Devayana or Pitriyana path. Now what is the difference between the two? Oh, we've touched on that. That the Pitriyana, those who follow that path don't go so far. They go as far as the moon or the Pitriloka. This is the path that is followed by the Karmakandiyas, who worship the forefathers and they worship the demigods with the purpose of entering the moon or the Pitriloka. Sometimes you'll find that these two are said to be the same, or that the Pitriloka is a department in the moon. But anyway, the moon planet and the Pitriloka planet are heavenly places where the Karmakandiyas go. And there they receive, if they enter the moon, a body which is called Somaraja, or a body of nectar, a body that is meant for tasting heavenly nectar. There's an interesting purport in which, in the second canto, in which Srila Prabhupada explains that in this human body, the genital organs are endowed with this ability to experience the same nectar. That's the only place on the human body. So therefore, human beings are very inclined to enjoy sex life. But if one goes to the moon, then one's whole body is endowed with the facility for tasting that nectar. So, anyway, you can just imagine. To attain such birth in moon or Pitriloka is very interesting for those who are lusty, inclined to sense gratification. So this is a goal of materialistic persons, but materialistic persons who are pious enough, intelligent enough to follow the Vedic injunctions here on earth. So they do not want liberation. They want elevation to a high status of sense gratification. So they follow this Krishna Paksha or this Pitriyana path. So, what this entails is that they are... I'll read the verse and purport. Canto 15, chapter 50, and... Sorry. Canto 7, chapter 15, text 50 and 51, and the purport. So the translation reads, "My dear King Yudhisthira, when oblations of ghee and food grains like barley and sesame are offered in sacrifice, they turn into celestial smoke, which carries one to successively higher planetary systems, like the kingdoms of Duma, Ratri, Krishna Paksha, Dakshinam, and ultimately the moon. Then, however, the performers of sacrifice descend again to earth to become herbs, creepers, vegetables, and food grains. These are eaten by different living entities and turned into semen, which is injected into female bodies. Thus, one takes birth again and again. So from the purport, this is explained, this is Srila Prabhupada's purport. This is explained in Bhagavad Gita 9.21, quote, when those who follow the Pravritti Marga have enjoyed heavenly sense pleasure, they return to this mortal planet again. Thus, through the Vedic principles, they achieve only flickering happiness. Following, this is the end of that quote of the Bhagavad Gita verse, continuing in the, with the purport. Following the Pravritti Marga, the living entity who desires to be promoted to the higher planetary systems performs sacrifices regularly, and how he goes up and comes down again is described here in Srimad Bhagavatam as well as in Bhagavad Gita. It is also said, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, the Vedas deal mainly with the three modes of material nature. The Vedas, especially three Vedas, namely Sama, Yajur, and Rik, vividly describe this process of ascending to the higher planets and returning. But Krishna advises Arjuna, Trigunya Vishaya Veda, Nistrigunya Bhavarjuna. One has to transcend these three modes of material nature, and one will be released from the cycle of birth and death. Otherwise, although one may be promoted to a higher planetary system such as Chandraloka, one must again come down, Kshine Punye Martyalokam Vishanti. After one's enjoyment due to pious activities is finished, one must return to this planet in rainfall and first take birth as a plant or creeper, which is eaten by various animals, including human beings, and turned into semen. This semen is injected into the female body, and thus the living entity takes birth. Those who return to earth in this way take birth, especially in higher families, like those of brahmanas. So this Karma Kandiya path is also called Pravritti Marga. Who knows the meaning of this Pravritti Marga as opposed to Nivritti Marga? Yes. Pravritti Marga means a path of sense gratification. So one can become elevated by Pravritti Marga or Karma Kandiya as far as Chandralok, but then one has to come back. Nivritti Marga means the path of renunciation. So one following Nivritti Marga, or the path of renunciation, liberation, he goes upward also. And he also reaches the moon, but he goes beyond. So let us hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 15, chapter... It's the day before Gaur Purnima, so... Also another thing is I discovered there's a nest of snakes under the seat. So maybe that's also the problem. Anyway, Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 7, chapter 15, texts 54 and 55. This is the path, again, the Devayana path, or path of liberation. So let us hear. On his path of ascent, the progressive living entity enters the different worlds of fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, and the passing of the sun in the north, along with their presiding demigods. When he enters Brahmaloka, he enjoys life for many millions of years, and finally his material designation comes to an end. He then comes to a subtle designation, from which he attains the causal destination, witnessing all previous states. Upon the annihilation of this causal state, he attains his pure state, in which he identifies with the super soul. In this way, the living entity becomes transcendental. And then the next verse reads, this gradual process of elevation for self-realization is meant for those who are truly aware of the absolute truth. After repeated birth on this stage, which is known as Devayana, one attains these consecutive stages. One is completely free from all material desires, being situated in the self, need not traverse the path of repeated birth and death. So this path described here, the Devayana, or the Nivritti Marga, is a path of Jnana Yoga. So in this path of Jnana Yoga, there is also worship of demigods. But the goal is different. The goal is not to enjoy. The goal is to go higher and higher. These stages, which are also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita, the fire, the sun, the day, the end of the day, the bright fortnight, the full moon, this is actually referring to various deities which mark the path of Archirada Vartma, the path of elevation. So in the Jnana Yoga process, as well as the Karma Yoga, one worships these demigods. But in Jnana Yoga, the goal is liberation, to enter Brahman. And when one is successful in Devayana, then he never comes back to this world of birth and death. So, going back to this question of the Kausitaki Upanishad, that all who leave this human body enter the moon, what this Upanishad is referring to are all souls who follow the Vedic culture, whether they be Karma Yogis or Jnana Yogis, or as we shall see momentarily, also the Bhakti Yogis. Because the devotees also follow the same path. We'll explain this in a moment. So this is important to understand, because I think in preaching, it is very likely, I think many of you devotees come from Eastern Europe, but in Eastern Europe, I've also heard the same question, that why do you say the human being may take birth in a lower species, when we have heard from Madame Blavatsky or whoever that the soul is always going higher and higher and higher. So it's very interesting to note that this misconception is coming out of Vedanta controversy, a philosophical argument over the Upanishads. It's very, very ancient. But Vedanta Sutra, Srila Vyasadeva's, as we said on the first day, it is his code for understanding the Upanishads. He refutes this argument. He says this is a Purva Paksha, or a wrong argument. And in his commentary, in Srimad Bhagavatam, he's explaining these two paths. And also he's explaining there is another path, a third path, for those who do not follow any Vedic injunction, who are neither Karma Yogis, Jnana Yogis, or Bhakti Yogis either. In other words, for those who are sinful. So what happens to them? Do they go to the moon? No! They go to hell. So here we see, explained in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 30, texts 33 and 34, the explanation of how one goes to hell. Translation: therefore, a person who is very eager to maintain his family and kinsmen simply by black methods, in other words, sinful methods, adharmena, the word is used, by irreligious activities, he certainly goes to the darkest region of hell, which is known as Andhatamishra. Now, there is also an argument mentioned, another Purvapaksha argument, or wrong argument, which says, all right, so he goes to hell. But then after he's punished in hell, then he goes to heaven. Then he goes up higher and higher. No. From Canto 3, Chapter 30, Text 34, we learn this is what happens. Having gone through all the miserable hellish conditions and having passed in a regular order through the lowest forms of animal life prior to human birth, and having been thus purged of his sins, one is reborn again as a human being on this earth. So you see, after having spent time in hell, then one comes up through the lower species. By these repeated births in lower species, one's sins are relieved, and finally one comes to the human form again. And there one has the choice whether he will follow karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga, or follow adharma again, sinful activities. And that choice depends on what happens to him next. Whether he is elevated on this Archiradi Vartma, or whether he again goes to hell. So, now when, let's speak a little more on this Archirada Vartma. The Upanishads and the Vedanta Sutra speak of the heart as the sitting place of the soul. And when the time for death comes upon the soul, then according to the soul's karma, a particular nadi means a channel, a subtle channel in the subtle body, the astral body. That channel is illuminated by the super soul. So again, if that soul is sinful, super soul will illuminate a path downwards. So it will go to hell via that path. But, or actually we hear that the Yamadut has come and pull him out of the body. But that path to hell, that is illuminated by the super soul for him. The Yamadut is carrying him by that path down to hell. But if one goes upwards, then there's a particular nadi, which is called Shushumna, which is illuminated, the Shushumna nadi. And this is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, Text 24. O King, when such a mystic passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Shushumna, to reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contaminations. And thereafter he goes still higher to the circle of Shishumara to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. So the Shushumna is mentioned in Srimad Bhagavatam. So through this Shushumna Nadi, this illuminated channel, he then passes into the region called Archis, which is this region of the sun's rays. Now that does not actually refer to just the sky above where we see the sunshine, but it's actually referring to a subtle manifestation of solar energy, such as that which is seen in the subtle body. Around everyone, there is an aura. You may know this from your reading of mystical books, that everyone has an aura around them. So that aura is constructed of this archis, these subtle sun rays, or mystical rays of the sun. So the soul passes into this region of the aura. And then traveling on this aura, he can go higher. Actually, when he reaches that region, he meets a guide called the Archis Deva, a luminous being, which conducts him higher. And then he meets successive devas, successive deities who take him higher and higher and higher. And finally, on the Devayana path, he comes to the Brahma Loka. So again, in your reading, perhaps before you became devotees, you read some mystical books and you read some things like this about guardian angels, about guides, luminous beings that take one higher. So this is all there in the Vedic literatures explained. Now, for the followers of the Pitriyana, those who worship the forefathers, the guides are the forefathers or their representatives. Therefore, you see, even in modern times, some people, when they've had what is called an NDE or near-death experience, they've clinically died in a hospital in operation, and then after 5-10 minutes, they came back to life. Sometimes they have memories, actually very startling memories, of first being in a dark place, then seeing a channel or tunnel which was lit by a very wonderful light, and they floated up through that channel, and they came into another world. And then there they saw their forefathers. Maybe they saw their father or grandfather. So this is an experience of those who are on the Pitriyana path, that their forefathers conduct them into heaven. And there they enjoy. So the Jnani Yogis, those on the Devayana path, they're conducted by other beings until they reach Brahma Loka. So who conducts the devotees? Because the devotees also traverse the same path of elevation, till they reach the edge of the universe. Who conducts the devotees? It's on the board. So you just have to look. The Vishnu Dutas. Yes. The Vishnu Dutas, as you know how they came to rescue Ajamiyo. But they also came for Dhruva Maharaj. And they told Dhruva Maharaj in Canto 4, Chapter 12, verses 24 and 25, that we are the representatives of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Creator of the whole universe, who carries in His hand the bow named Saranga. We have been specifically deputed to take you to the spiritual world. To achieve Vishnu Loka is very difficult, but by your austerity you have conquered. Even the great rishis and demigods cannot achieve this position. Now, here the Vishnu Dutas are referring, when they say the rishis, they're referring to those who follow the Devayana path, who go as far as Brahma Loka, or who may attain impersonal Brahman. And when they speak of the demigods, they're referring to those who enter the heavenly planets to enjoy. So here the Vishnu Dutas, they're saying that we are going to take you beyond that, beyond what is reached by the demigods and also the sages. Simply to see the supreme abode, the Vishnu planet, the sun and moon and all other planets, stars, lunar mansions and solar systems are circumambulating it. Now please come. You are welcome to go there. So from the purport, Srila Prabhupada writes, even in this material world, the so-called scientists, philosophers, and mental speculators strive to merge into the spiritual sky, but they can never go there. But a devotee, by executing devotional service, not only realizes what the spiritual world actually is, But he factually goes there to live an eternal life of bliss and knowledge. The Krishna consciousness movement is so potent that by adopting these principles of life and developing love of Godhead, one can very easily go back home, back to Godhead. Here the practical example is in the case of Dhruva Maharaj. While the scientist and philosopher go to the moon but are disappointed in their attempts to stay there and live, the devotee makes an easy journey to other planets and ultimately goes back to Godhead. Devotees have no interest in seeing other planets, but while going back to Godhead, they see all of them as passing phases, just as one who is going to a distant place passes through many small stations. So here you see the devotee is also traversing that same path, Pitriyana, Deviyana. He's seeing all these places flash by. But he's not interested in them. Now, if he is interested in them, you see, if he still has some interest for sense gratification somewhere in his heart, then he's going to see a place that will captivate him. And he'll tell the Vishnu Dutas, I think I'd like to stop here. Looks very nice. So then he remains within the material world. That's why Krishna says that those who are not, in Bhagavad Gita, those who are not perfect in devotional service, they go to the planets of demigods, and then they come back to earth. But there they get another chance to take up devotional service. You see, they should have gone back to Godhead, but because in the heart there was some hidden desire for sense gratification, then seeing all these places go by, they saw that place. Oh, boy, I didn't know the material world could be like this. Well, looks very nice. So that's why Srila Prabhupada always warned us that even you have a slight pinch of desire for sense gratification, you cannot leave this material world. You cannot enter the spiritual world. Because Maya will show you that just that place which suits your particular very subtle material desire. And you'll become captivated. So therefore we should really try in this human form of life, now that we have it and we have this opportunity to perform devotional service, we should really try to rid ourselves by strict practice of sadhana bhakti, bhakti yoga. We should really try to rid ourselves, certainly of all gross, but as well as all subtle, fine desires for sense gratification and mental speculation. Mental speculation means the muni lokas, like jhana loka, tapa loka, and finally brahma loka. I think I mentioned before how Srila Prabhupada said there is no sense gratification in these regions. But there is mental speculation. That is the material happiness. They're great sages. They like to think about Vedic knowledge, discuss among themselves, speculate. In this way, they remain in the material world. So, the devotee is conducted to the Brahmaloka and then beyond. So, here, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, verses 28 to 30, we hear, after reaching Satyaloka, the planet of Brahma in other words, the devotee is specifically able to be incorporated fearlessly by the subtle body in an identity similar to that of the gross body, and one after another, he gradually attains stages of existence from earthly to watery, fiery, glowing, and airy, until he reaches the ethereal stage. So what is being referred to here as mentioned in this purport to this verse? As Srila Prabhupada writes, one who attains the place, means the Brahma Loka, by dint of devotional service, is specifically mentioned here in relation to how he can penetrate into the different coverings of the universe and thus ultimately disclose his spiritual identity in the absolute atmosphere of supreme existence. So the devotee, and then going on, the devotee thus surpasses the subtle objects of different senses, like aroma by smelling, the palate by tasting, vision by seeing forms, touch by contacting, the vibrations of the ear by ethereal identification, and the sense organs by material activities. The devotee, thus surpassing the gross and subtle forms of coverings, enters the plane of egoism, and in that status he merges the material modes of nature, ignorance, and passion in this point of neutralization, and thus reaches egoism and goodness. After this, all egoism is merged in the Mahatattva, and he comes to the point of pure self-realization. So he passes through the Achit Shakti, all of this, these layers of the universe, and egoism, in ignorance, passion, and goodness, is called in Srimad Bhagavatam, Achit Shakti. This is mentioned in Canto 7, Chapter 3, Text 34. Achit Shakti is the material energy of Krishna. So the devotee passes through that, and he attains his own spiritual identity. Now comes the next question from the Mayavadi side. The Mayavadis, they refer to Upanishads, like for instance, Gopal Tapani Upanishad says that when one becomes, when one attains the spiritual destination, when one becomes fully illumined by spiritual knowledge, then he should think soham. He should think, I am he, or I am the Lord. So the Mayavadis take that to mean that you merge into the existence of the Lord. But actually, this sense of soham is referring, of thinking I am he, is not referring to merging, becoming one with God, but it's actually referring to transcendental ecstasy. Ecstasy of devotional love of Krishna, such as that which is seen in the gopis of Vrindavan. And here is the reference. As I've been saying all along, Srimad Bhagavatam is commentary on Vedanta Sutra. So all these questions that are raised in Vedanta and the Upanishads and so on are answered in Srimad Bhagavatam. So, from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 30, Text 3, we learn, because the beloved gopis were absorbed in thoughts of their beloved Krishna, their bodies imitated his way of moving and smiling, his way of beholding them, his speech, and his other distinctive features. Deeply immersed in thinking of him and maddened by remembering his pastimes, they declared to one another, I am Krishna. So you know that when Krishna left for Mathura, the gopis of Raja were alone without his association. Then in the ecstasy of Vipralamba, or separation, which Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught is the highest ecstasy of love of Godhead, they began to enact Krishna's pastimes. This was their Krishna consciousness. They were remembering Krishna's pastimes to such a degree that they were acting them out for one another. And thus they were declaring, I am Krishna, by imitating his pastimes. So this is the Bhagavata explanation of those Upanishadic references which say, you know, the goal is soham, to think of oneself. Yes, you can think of oneself as being Krishna, but in the mood of the gopis, in the mood of ecstatic loving separation. That is proper. Not in the mood of the impersonalists. So, Bhagavatam explains that I have several verses. Actually, I'll list the verses by number for you. You can look them up later, but I'm only going to read a couple. Bhagavatam explains that when one attains the spiritual world, one attains liberation, then he attains his eternal relationship, loving relationship with Krishna. That is a relationship of devotional service. So the references are, for instance, Canto 6, Chapter 16, Text 25, Canto 9, Chapter 4, Texts 63 and 64, and Canto 9, Chapter 4, Text 68. So I'll just read a couple. Canto 6, 16, 25. O transcendental Lord, who are situated in the topmost planet of the spiritual world, your two lotus feet are always massaged by a multitude of the best devotees with their lotus bud hands. You are the Supreme Personality of Godhead, complete in six opulences. You are the Supreme Person mentioned in the Purusha Shukta prayers. You are the most perfect self-realized master of all mystic power. Let me offer my respectful obeisances unto you. So here it is very clearly described that the Supreme Lord lives in the topmost planet, Goloka Vrindavan. And the devotees who attain them here do not merge with him, but they are engaged in rendering service. For instance, they are massaging his lotus feet with their lotus bud-like hands or spiritual hands. This similarity between lotus feet, the Lord's lotus feet, and the devotee's lotus bud hands are indicating the similarity of their forms. That Krishna has a spiritual form, and so also do Krishna's devotees. Chandogya Upanishad, which is the Upanishads are very much loved by the Mayavadis, because the Upanishads are written in language which is easy to interpret sometimes in different ways. So the Upanishads, the Chandogya Upanishad, speaks of how this soul rises up. Having left the last material body, the soul rises up into light, into the jyoti, to the spiritual light, and attains its swarup. So such descriptions are very appealing to the Mayavadis. But then that same Chandogya Upanishad goes on to say that in that spiritual realm, this soul meets other liberated souls. And together with them, he enjoys. And different activities are mentioned, like laughing and singing and so on. So then this becomes very confusing for the Mayavadis. Why do the Upanishads say such things as this? So why? It is clearly said here in Srimad Bhagavatam, clearly explained, so that there's no doubt, that these liberated souls, they're attaining their swarup in the spiritual world of Krishna. They are receiving a spiritual form. And in Krishna's association, they're enjoying together. In fact, the Lord says, He told the yogi Durvas, when Durvas came to Svetadvip, the Svetadvip planet, to beg Lord Vishnu to call off his Sudarsan chakra. So the Lord explained that Sudarsan is pursuing you because you have offended my devotee. And there's really nothing I can do about that. Because I am not independent from my devotee. So therefore neither is my Sudarsan chakra. You've offended my devotee, so the Sudarsan automatically acts in this way. So the Lord told Durvasa Muni that I am completely under the control of my devotees. Indeed, I am not at all independent. Because my devotees are completely devoid of material desires, I sit only within the cores of their hearts. What to speak of my devotee, even those who are devotees of my devotees are very dear to me. Shadubhya Grasta Hridayo Bhaktaira Bhakta Janapriya. So this last line, Bhaktaira Bhakta Janapriya, is indicating for all of our benefit how any one of us can become successful in attaining the supreme goal of life. One should just become dear to the devotees of the Lord. Because the Lord says, my devotees are so dear to me, I cannot be separate from them. I sit in the cores of their heart. And indeed, whoever is dear to my devotees, they're also dear to me. So he accepts the Bhakta Jana, the followers of devotees, as his own devotees also. So Srila Prabhupada said it is a very rare thing to become a Vaishnava. So therefore we should try to be servants of the Vaishnavas. And then for us, this exalted path of liberation, of going back home, back to Godhead, is opened. Then the Lord goes on to say, O best of the Brahmanas, without saintly persons, for whom I am the only destination, I do not desire to enjoy my transcendental bliss and my supreme opulences. So the Lord does not find even the spiritual world attractive if there would be no devotees there. That is actually why there is a spiritual world, so that the Lord can receive the service of his devotees there. Otherwise, without devotees, Krishna has no interest in opulence, his spiritual opulence. And this is also very interesting, because as we've been explaining from Srimad Bhagavatam, what is the material world? What is the material energy? It is simply the Lord's spiritual energy, but devoid of devotion. The material world is a place where the non-devotees go. So therefore, Krishna is not very much interested here. You see? So actually, the difference between the spiritual world and material world is simply the difference between where Krishna is enjoying and where he's not enjoying. So the spiritual world is also here, wherever the devotees are serving Krishna and adding to his transcendental pleasure by their service. Then Krishna is present, just like this holy dham of Mayapur. This is the spiritual world. Why? Because here the devotees of the Lord serve him, give pleasure to his senses. That is why this is the spiritual world. No other reason. So, I think now you can all understand why Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, and why it is also stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam, that the devotees are not bewildered by these two paths, the paths that are followed by the Pravritti Margis and the Nivritti Margi. I think now that becomes clear. The devotee, he's also traversing that same path, but he's not interested in any of the stops on the way that attract the Pravritti Margis or the Karmakandiyas and the Nivritti Margis or the Jnana Kandiyas. So therefore, he's not bewildered by these two paths. That's the sense of this word. And this is also why devotees do not worship demigods. This is also why Krishna explains to Arjuna, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. Those who worship the demigods, they go to the demigods. But those who worship me, those who worship the Pitris, go to the Pitris. Those who worship the ghosts, go to the ghosts. Those who worship me, come to me. The devotees don't worship the demigods because the devotees don't want to end up in some Devaloka somewhere. They worship only Krishna. And thus Krishna himself, or Krishna's representatives, the Yamadutas, the Vishnu Dutas. These snakes again. The Vishnu Dutas, they come to personally conduct the devotee back home, back to Godhead. So are there any questions? Yes? He wants to know what happens at the time of death to persons who live in the holy dham but are not good devotees, who are engaged. Well, the thing, I'm going to answer that question. Not good devotees and are engaged in such activities as smoking, bidi, and this and that. So he wanted to know what happens to those who are not devotees. But the thing is that everyone who lives in the holy dham is a devotee of some kind or other. They may not be such good devotees, but they couldn't be here if they were not devotees. So they're devotees. All those who live here, even the Muslims, they know who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So that means they're very, very exalted souls. They know who is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. They know what is Hare Krishna Maha Mantra. They know what is Sankirtan. They may not practice, but they know. They've known from their very birth. So how much more exalted they are than people from countries outside of India who don't know anything. Or even countries outside, areas in India outside of this holy dham. They don't know who is Lord Chaitanya. So, but still they're engaged in materialistic activities. Therefore they have to take birth in the dham again, as animals. And then after that birth as animals, they're liberated. They go back home, back to Godhead. Yes?
The Bhagavad Gita is described that by Karma Yoga and Dhyana Yoga, it is possible to achieve the super soul.
Uh-huh.
So, how to achieve the Brahman realization is easy to understand, but what exactly is the step from Brahman realization to Karma Yoga?
Yes. His question is that those who, Bhagavad Gita says, those who follow Karma Kanda and Jnana Kanda can achieve the super soul. Yes. So, for those who follow Karma Kanda, they're worshipping Vishnu, but as the universal form. Therefore, they're interested in ascending up through the planetary systems. They're interested in the sense gratification that is available in the Vishvarupa. So their conception of the universal of Vishnu is Vishnu as Vishvarupa, universal form. And on the Jnana Yoga path, well, actually to attain impersonal Brahman, since the Brahman is the effulgence of the super soul, in that way they also attain super soul. But more advanced than the Brahmajnanis or Brahmavadis are the Paramatmavadis, who actually meditate upon the form of the Lord in the heart. This is the higher stage of Jnana Yoga, the mystic yoga system. So they're interested in mystic powers, or they're interested in Ishvara Sayujya, it is called, to actually merge into the form of the super soul. This is also not devotional service. It's a mystical process. Yeah, well, the Vaya Media are the rays of Brahman, because these rays emanate from the super soul. So they first of all meditate upon that, the light. And those, this is also, you'll see in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Lord Chaitanya is explaining in his Atmarama, his explanations of the Atmarama verse, that in Shantarasa, there are some 13 stages, he explains. The lowest platform are those who are just merged in the light of Brahmajyoti. On the highest platform are those who have penetrated the light and realized the form of the Supersoul. All of this is Shantaras. And the Shantaras is the highest stage attainable by the Jnanis. So there are these different levels. So the Shantaras, that neutral relationship with the Lord, is also seen in those who just enter the Brahmajyoti. They also have, that's also termed a kind of Shantaras, the lowest stage. So the Jnanis, you know, they may be on different stages of advancement in the Shantaras. Yes, but that will only be possible by association with pure devotees. He learns that from the devotees. Otherwise, by this mystic process, he may approach the Supersoul, but his motivation, again, is for mystic powers or for liberation. And that the Lord will give him. It is said the Lord gives that very easily. Of course, they have to. He gives that very easily after they perform so many hard austerities. And once they have attained his darshan, then very easily they can get all mystic powers or they can merge into him. But what's so special about merging into Vishnu when we all do that at the end of the cosmic manifestation anyway? So that's not a very great thing. Yes? Yeah, he's asking about the arguments that Madame Blavatsky and others have used. I think you're talking about this, their belief in the continual elevation of the soul. That's what I was referring to. They believe that after a human being dies, his soul must be promoted upwards, automatically. Yeah, this, as I said, this is based on a verse from an Upanishad, Kositaki Upanishad, which says, all those who depart the human body attain the moon. But I explain what this meant. All those means all those who are following the Vedic path, either karma, jnana, or even bhakti paths. They will attain the moon. They will reach the moon. Of course, the jnanis and the bhaktis will go beyond. The karmis will stay there. So that's the reference. All those who are practicing Vedic Dharma. But those who are not, they will go downward. They'll fall down. So this is the mistake they make. Nowadays, people are engaged in sinful activities, but these New Age, you know, mystics, psychics, whoever they are, misleaders, they say, oh, it doesn't matter what you do, because automatically after you die, your soul will be promoted. They always talk of the next stage, the next platform, the next dimension or whatever. Yes, but it is very ancient misunderstanding. Yes?
It says that a devotee can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya in the time of death. He takes him to one of the planetary systems where Vishnu is appearing.
Mm-hmm.
How it's available according to legislation?
Yes, well, you see, to enter Krishna's pastimes, one must be trained. So one attains, one actually passes through all that. But one attains Krishna, association of Krishna, in the universe where he's displaying his Leela. One takes birth there with Krishna, just as Krishna, so to speak, takes birth. But that birth is divyam, transcendental. So similarly, the birth of the devotee is transcendental. He's taking birth, you can say, in another material universe, but that birth is to be with Krishna. So it is actually a transcendental birth. And the purpose of that birth is to be trained in association, direct association with Krishna. And whatever lingering impurities may still be there, they will be burned off at that time. Just like when Krishna calls the gopis, so it is described, some of the gopis, they cannot leave their house because their husbands and older relatives forcibly hold them back. So they give up their bodies in anxiety of separation. What that means is that they're held back from joining Krishna by certain very subtle attachments. What are these attachments? These are actually attachments to piety. Because they're women, they're at home with their husbands, so they have what is called stri dharma, a dharma of pious womanhood, which they're attached to, which holds them back. Krishna says, sarva dharma parichita, you have to give up all dharmas to be with me. So even piety you have to give up, material piety. So in this way, that attachment is burned off, because although the body is held back, out of anxiety to be with Krishna, they leave that body, and then they join Krishna in a spiritual body. So in this way, they're trained up in that, you can say, that final birth. And giving up even the most subtle, fine attachments. And thus they associate with Krishna without any reservation. And then they go to Goloka with Krishna from there. Yeah, because they have to leave this universe to go to the universe, whichever universe Krishna is. So they're passing the same path. Yes. So his question is that spiritual masters have their different many disciples, and he's wondering if these disciples have different rasas, what is their relationship with the spiritual master? Or perhaps the answer is that all these disciples have the same rasa as their spiritual master. So the answer is that the spiritual master is Krishna's representative, and Krishna empowers him to teach his disciple how to serve Krishna no matter what his rasa is. So therefore we find in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's book Jaiva Dharma that as the spiritual master had two disciples of two different rasas. And the same spiritual master appeared to these disciples when they were liberated in the form of their rasa, in the form of cowherd boy and the form of gopi. The same spiritual master. To the one disciple who had rasa of cowherd boy, the spiritual master appeared as a cowherd boy. And to the disciple who had rasa as gopi, that same spiritual master appeared to him as gopi. So it doesn't matter. The spiritual master is empowered by Krishna to instruct his disciples. He's given full power. So regardless of what the spiritual master's own rasa may be, He can instruct his disciples in any rasa and get them situated, because he is Krishna's representative. Yes? No, there's no contradiction. The super soul illuminates the path to hell. That's all that you need to understand. That path to hell is illuminated, and he's dragged along that path by the Yamadutas. Just like for the devotee, the path to Brahma Loka and beyond is illuminated, and he's conducted along that path by the Vishnu Dutas. Easy enough. Yes? So his question is, it is said that the relationship between the spiritual master and disciple is said to be eternal. What does that mean? Because eternal also means without beginning. Yes, the answer to that question is very easy. In Bhagavad Gita purport, Srila Prabhupada says that Krishna is the real spiritual master. So your relationship with Krishna is eternal, without beginning. And the spiritual master who comes to save you, he is sent by Krishna. He is Krishna's representative. It is stated, Jive Shakshat Nahitata Guru Chetarupa. The Guru is actually within the heart, but the Jiva and Maya cannot understand him there. So Shiksha Guru Haiti Habi Mahanta Swarupa. Therefore, the Shiksha Guru comes in the form of Mahant, a devotee. So, in that sense, your relationship with the Mahant, the devotee, has its beginning. Ramanda Brahmati Konse Bhagyavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasadi Bhai Bhakti Latu Beach. There's a time when you are Bhagyavan, fortunate to have the association of a pure devotee. That has its beginning in time. But who is that devotee? He's representative of Krishna. And your relationship with Krishna, the Chaitya Guru, the Lord in the heart, is eternal. Therefore, and also another point is, since Krishna and Krishna's devotee cannot be separated, therefore your relationship with Krishna's devotee is also eternal. But there's one time when Krishna's devotee comes to you and says, all right, stop this nonsense, let's go back home, back to Godhead. Krishna's waiting for you now. Yes? In the case of what? Yes.
So apparently it was some confusion. So I didn't know exactly the super soul was trying to make in that
Well, the thing was is that in case of Ajamil, because he chanted the holy name of the Lord. You see, his being taken off by the Yamadutas, that is the automatic reaction of his sinful activities. That is the results of his sinful activities. In other words, that is the working of Maya, the machinery of Maya. But because he chanted the holy name of Narayan, therefore this machinery of the material nature was suddenly stopped by the appearance of the Vishnu Dutas. And they told Ajamil that because you've chanted the holy name, and therefore it is not your time to leave. your body. This was the result. Not that any path was illuminated. The Yamadutas thought, oh, we should take him. But the Vishnudutas said, no, he has chanted the holy name of Lord. And they told Ajamil, so now you will stay in your body some time longer. Now you should become a proper devotee. So that when you leave your body at the proper time in the future, then you can go back home, back to Godhead. So after that time, Ajamil became very serious. And he practiced Krishna consciousness nicely, became pure devotee, and then went back home, back to Godhead. Yeah? No, the sinful reactions or desires are there in the heart. But what has been purified or what he's been relieved of are the very heavy, gross reactions to them. But the seeds of material desire are there. It's like this, like from a seed, a plant grows. Then winter comes and the plant withers up, all the leaves fall off. It seems the plant has died. Some flowers, they completely wither away. But then when spring comes, from the same seed, the flower grows new. So like that, from a sinful desire, a sinful reaction grows up. And then it can be cut, gradually withered away or cut away by suffering reactions, as one must do when one passes up through these species of life. So then the reaction seems to have gone, but the seed is still there, and it can grow up again in that human form. Yes. Yes, it is. What happens is all a matter of association. If he associates only with sinful people, then by that association the sinful desire seeds are watered and they grow. But if he associates with a pure devotee, then the bhakti lata bija, the seed of devotional service, is planted in his heart. And by association and practice, that is watered. And the devotional creeper grows. So his question is, when one descends from the celestial, the higher planets, does one immediately attain human form of life, or can one enter animal species? Well, we've heard that the soul actually enters, first of all, the bodies of plants. And then these plants are eaten by different living entities. And then the soul in this way passes from the male into the womb of the female and receives a body. So plants are also eaten by lower creatures too. So there is some possibility that one may fall down from heaven and then end up in the womb of a mother cow or horse or something else. The chance is there. It depends. You see, it's all adjusted by his residual pious or impious activities. Even when he goes to heaven and comes back, there are some residual, subtle, pious, impious reactions. So depending on what is there, he may take birth as human or also as animal. Yes?
When we go back on the Godhead, we have a different position. put temperatures and all like this, you know. I don't know. Maybe go switch it to work. They also be held like this.
His question is, in the material world, devotees have positions of high and low, like spiritual master, temple president, and so on. So when we go in the spiritual world, will we find these same kind of high and low positions? Srila Prabhupada said that we will have our ISKCON in the spiritual world. So everything will be the same. What we have to see, what we have to learn here, is that actually there is no high or low. Everything in Krishna consciousness is absolute. Everyone is connected with Krishna through devotional service. Therefore, this sense of high and low is actually only a mundane idea. There are different positions in the spiritual world. The devotees have different relationships with Krishna. But all are Krishna conscious. All are serving and loving Krishna. And Krishna is reciprocating with all of them according to their love. So, therefore, you know, Srila Prabhupada, he was very displeased when he saw that some of his disciples in Los Angeles were studying Chaitanya Charitamrita, the prayers of the gopis to Krishna and the descriptions of the gopis' Leela, Madhura Leela with Krishna. They were only reading this and they were trying to cultivate some gopi bhava, they called it, some ecstasy of the gopis. And Prabhupada was very displeased with this. He said, oh, they think that by becoming gopis, then they'll be better than Mother Yashoda. This is a material conception. Just like in the material world, one wants to be promoted. He gets a job in some company and he's thinking, let me work and get promoted, higher salary, higher position, higher. So it is not like that. Whether one becomes gopi or Krishna's mother or friend of Krishna, it's simply according to love, the flavor of love. It has nothing to do with higher or lower. And that flavor of love, you will find, whatever it may be, absolutely satisfying to you. Because Krishna will relate with you. You will relate with Krishna in just the way that you feel most natural. Of course, in Vrindavan, in Goloka Vrindavan, the devotees, they even change their rasa according to the need. But this is very esoteric. But Prabhupada referred to this. There is also a story, an account in the literature of the Goswamis, how one cowherd boy, because Krishna wanted to take a bath in the Jamuna River, but the Jamuna River was far away, so this cowherd boy took the form of a river so that Krishna could bathe in him. And then when Krishna came out of that river, Krishna needed to dry himself, so the cowherd boy took the form of a towel so that Krishna could dry himself. So these things are going on. The relationship with Krishna in Goloka Vrindavan is spontaneous. Devotees, they are looking for the opportunity to serve Krishna. So in this way, the rasas change. But every devotee has one principal rasa that he likes best. So the fact is, whatever that rasa is, that is what you like that best. Because you can associate and serve Krishna in the way that you like best. So there's no question of someone who's in the cowherd boy rasa thinking, oh, this is boring. I'm tired of taking lunch with Krishna. I want to dance with Krishna in Ras Leela. So I want to be a gopi. The devotees never think like that. They don't think this way. They only think, what does Krishna want from me? So Krishna wants me to be cowherd boy? Yes, I feel that that's best. because I find that by serving Krishna in this way, that is my natural position. Or Krishna wants me to be gopi, or Krishna wants me to be something else. And even then, sometimes the opportunity is there to be something else. Oh, now Krishna wants this. All right, there's no one else. There's no one else with that rasa here right now. All right, so I'll do it. It's like in ISKCON, you mentioned temple president or guru, but sometimes they're also cleaning the floor. Because it's Krishna's service. You see, when Krishna's temple has to be cleaned, we don't call for the bungees. You know, they have this class of sweepers. We're considered very low class. So we don't have some bungee class standing by. Untouchable class. Hey, you now clean the temple. The devotees clean the temple. We don't think that this is low. This is Krishna's service. Everything is absolute. 2 many questions. Yes. It's the same. This is a fivefold sacrifice, which is mentioned in the Upanishads. The sacrifice which conducts one. This is the Pitriyana process. Fivefold sacrifice, fivefold offering, by which one leaves this human body, attains the heavenly world, enjoys there, comes back down, and attains a human birth in Varnashram culture. Well, they come down by way of the rain, and the rain is, of course, generated by sacrifice, by the sacrifice of persons on earth. All right, few more questions. So, okay, you didn't ask one before. Oh, okay, you translate.
Are there the books of Goswami in
I've never been in the library of Jagannath Puri. There's a Vrindavan Research Institute in Vrindavan where they're keeping old books of the Goswamis. But the major books, the major writings of the Goswamis are available, of course, in Sanskrit and Bengali. But they're preserved in this Gaudiya Vaishnav Sampradaya. And some are being translated by the BBT. The BBT has a plan for translating some important philosophical works of the Goswamis. Other devotees have also translated, but I cannot recommend their accuracy. Although they're there. There's the Krishna Institute from Los Angeles. There are many volumes of books, Goswami literature, but as I said, the accuracy may not be that good. Yes?
Those the end of the simple is to go to hell. After that they return to Earthland. What kind of body they receive?
Well, as we heard, we read the verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. They come up through lower species until they achieve human birth. And then in the human form of life, they have choice. If they follow Vedic injunctions, either Karma Kanda, Jnana Kanda, or Bhakti Yoga, they will be promoted. If they neglect Vedic injunctions and again are sinful, they will again fall down to hell. Okay? Yes?
We can understand this process of giving up each element or neutralize this element all through this layers of the universe.
Yes. So the subtle body contains these subtle elements. And these subtle elements is actually referring to the... They're also seen in the covering of the universe. These are subtle elements. So for the subtle body, or for the soul rather, to pass through the layers of the universe, then he has to relinquish bit by bit these aspects of his subtle body. They are merged into each layer. All the elements are seen in these layers. Yes, by going through. Otherwise, he cannot go through. So within every layer, there's a deity also. This is described in Brihad Bhagavatamrita. The presiding deity of the watery layer is Matsya. And there's presiding deity of the fiery and so on. Mind, all have their presiding deity, form of Vishnu. So passing beyond for a devotee actually simply means to worship these forms and get their blessing. So they bless the devotee by removing attachment for that element so that he can go beyond. Yes, Maharaji? One who is liberated within the body is called Jivan Mukta. So, Jivan Mukta, as explained by Baladev Vidyabhusan, that is a liberated Vaishnava. A pure devotee of the Lord lives within this body to serve Krishna only. So he's not in any way, his consciousness is not in any way confined by this body. He's not attached to it. Actually, within his heart, he's in the spiritual world. He's with Krishna. And he's seeing Krishna's eternal pastimes within his heart. So he's not actually in the material world. But he has a body by which he preaches. So he is called Jivan Mukta. And the other kind of moksha or mukti, which is attained by one who is becoming liberated from the body, that's called Videha Mukti. That means giving up the body, the conditioned body, giving it up. So, this Jivan Mukta is only available to Vaishnavas. The Mayavadis.